Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Hello. You would think like 80 episodes in, we would figure out how to begin an episode. Never.
I think 80 episodes in, starting an episode is maybe the least of our worries.
Yeah. Like, no, you're probably right.
Are we recording?
Yes, we are. I never stopped. Okay. I never stopped recording. So we're just going.
Number one, maybe I could like learn to stop asking that question. But you never know. I like to be sure.
Yeah. Recording manipulatively.
The feminine urge to record.
I saw this, I think it was like an article about a viral TikTok about the live listen feature on iPhones.
No.
Where it's a feature on your iPhone and it basically makes your iPhone into like a microphone live. So you can like leave your phone somewhere with your AirPods in and then walk away and like listen to what people are saying.
Like a baby monitor?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Oh, I don't like all that. I don't need to know.
Exactly.
Listen, if I'm out of the room, I don't want to hear what you're
like
saying about
dumb
me.
Dumb viral. Everyone's like, I left my phone on the table with my friends and then I walked away to see what they said about me. And I wonder how many people were just not talking about you at all, because who cares?
No, I'm sorry. I'm an intuitive girl. If you're saying anything about me, I already know.
Probably, yeah.
And I certainly don't want to leave my phone. Like, imagine me going somewhere without my phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, surprise, it's sutured to my hand.
What other people say about me behind my back is none of my business.
None of my business.
And I prefer to keep it that way.
I am filled with like self-righteous rage tonight. I don't know why. Like, literally for no reason. I just like hear myself screaming and I'm like, things are fine.
You're just mad at the world.
I am mad at the world.
The world has a lot of explaining to do.
It really does.
Yeah. I very easily get sidetracked with like minor rage fits that I'm like, wait, why do I care about this? Like,
I know most of them happen on this podcast. Yes. Is your hair? That's the end of my question. Is your hair?
It looks, yes, it is.
It looks shorter.
No. It's, I guess I trimmed these stupid, getting bangs is always a mistake that I never know until I do it. And then I'm like, oh no, I've made the same mistake.
This one goes out to Rachel Perkins.
Yes. I should have learned in 2015 when I vowed to never again do bangs. And yet all it took was like a global pandemic for my clown ass to forget that. And I'm like, oh yeah, shag, that'll be cute.
It's fine. We all did dumb shit during the pandemic.
Yeah. I really thought I would make it out without getting bangs, but I failed.
I don't know. The bangs like go with the whole look though. It's not just like a haircut with bangs.
They're like,
the whole cut is kind of a bang.
Yes, actually, yes. That's all shags are, is a whole head bang. You just sit in the chair and you go, give me bangs, but everywhere.
Yeah, literally.
Got you, fam.
It's Wednesday night. It is Wednesday,
it
right?
It is Wednesday, yes.
Oh my God. And it's the second time I've asked that question. It's Wednesday night and we're running on fumes.
We are, as always.
But we're recording remotely. Mm-hmm. Which we hate, but sometimes things are necessary.
Yes. We don't have to speak of why if you don't wish to.
I don't think I, well, okay. Now it's fucking obvious. God. Jesus. Last time this happened, I was like, and no one knew. And I was editing the episode and I was like, my voice is 4 octaves lower. I'm like, for once, not in my like gay scream register, like my Mariah Carey whistle note. I'm so hungry.
Eat something.
So yeah, we're recording from our homes, our lovely homes.
Yes.
One of us can't leave it for 10 days. sorry, this is not a laughing matter. Get boosted. Get boosted and still fucking get it. Anyway.
Tynan's rage against the machine moment.
Literally. <It's fine.
laughs> Well, you can still smell, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's all that matters. That's all.
Didn't lose it last time.
Yeah.
Didn't lose it this time. It's going to take more than that to take me down. Motherfucker.
Should we get into it?
Sure.
Tynan, what are you smelling today?
I am thrilled. I love the way that I smell, but more so, I think that you are going to like this even more than I do. So next time we are together, I'm going to bring it over.
Okay.
This is from, have you heard of this brand? It's from a brand called Ariel Shoshana.
That name sounds familiar, probably because I got a press email from them. But yeah.
Okay, so actually, let me get the box. Hold on.
Okay.
My absolute favorite thing to do is walk away from a hot mic while we're recording, the way it thrills me.
I like the sound depth.
Yeah, right.
You get like a really good like spatial effect.
Just me walking around my mansion. So this isn't the one I'm wearing, but this is what the bottle looks like.
Oh, that's so cute.
Do you love me talking about this on a non-visual medium?
So describe it. Describe it for us.
Right. So the bottle, it's the base of it is giving like Byredo vibes in that it's just like a cylinder. And then the top is a big polka dot, also known as a circle.
Like a circle.
Like a big circle standing upright with like a half circle stacked on top of it in contrasting color. Just Google Ariel.
It's like
Shoshana,
an ice cream
please.
Cone. Kind of. Like ice cream scoop. It's like when you're a kid and you draw ice cream.
Or like boobs seen from the side.
Boobs seen from the side. One or the other.
Anyway, so these are what the bottles look like. It's gorgeous. I'm sorry, listener. Just use your imagination.
Yeah.
God. It's like an audiobook. So I actually got served these randomly on... Let me close the box on the mic. I got served these randomly on Instagram, and I've never... They're not like an Instagram brand. You know exactly what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard of them or seen them before. But the bottles are so cool that I was like, now hold on a second. I emailed them. They hit me right back. They're like, hey, like we've been a fan of you guys since XO Jane. Like I've been reading your writing since forever. And I was like, oh.
Okay. Love
so
to hear
can
it.
Can you send me the fragrances? Yes. Right. And they have three fragrances in their collection. They're also... Never mind. One's called Friday, one's called Saturday, and one's called Sunday. And immediately, like, she loves a weekend. Mm-hmm. So I loved the concept. I was obsessed with it. I have worn Friday, and I don't think I've worn Saturday yet. So I can't speak to that one. I'm wearing Sunday. And I thought that I'd like it. And guess what? I do. This is it's a matcha fragrance.
Does it actually smell like matcha?
Yes, but it smells like matcha. Let me just spray it on again. Let me make sure I can still smell. It's a take on matcha that is not dissimilar to Replica's Matcha Meditation in that it's more of like matcha in the scene that it lives in.
Okay.
But the difference between those two, I think I realized that I like Matcha Meditation more than I did like in the moment. Now I really like it. This one has a little bit more depth and it has a couple more ideas going on within it. It's really lovely. So to be like a basic bitch and just read the copy, but the copy is what sold me. And, you know, copy is very important in fragrance. Mm-hmm. And for once, like we have some good stuff. It's pretty tight. So a gentle swirl of matcha green tea, creamy rice milk, and a delicious sprinkle of cinnamon, Sunday serenity, any day of the week, LOL. The notes are matcha tea, rice milk, cinnamon, mate, absolute, cardamom, coconut, amber, sandalwood, and vanilla. And just like, how could you not fall in love with that? And you are giving me the most skeptical look across the Zoom screen. No. You have something to say. I smell good.
No, I'm sure it smells good. I'm just like, huh, rice milk. Like, that's such an interesting addition, like such a specific addition to a matcha scent.
Well, last year, everyone did all those fragrances with almond milk.
Oh,
too.
Right. Which is like also, you know, like, I mean, of all the nut milks, like almond milk. Interesting.
Yeah.
But rice milk. Okay.
Can't tell you how much I hate the phrase nut milk. Like, was that all we had? Was that all we had? So
milk from a nut.
Okay. Anyway, these were released in 2019 and it's just so good. Like, they're good with a question mark. Yeah. It is so good. You definitely get the pretty literal note of green tea and the earthy sort of tea. Mm-hmm. But again, there's the creamy steamed rice milk and nutmeg and cinnamon and everything on top of it. And the like frothy buoyancy of the nut milk. And that makes it creamy and gives it a mellow sweetness without going straight to gourmand, and the spicy notes of like the bakery spices that yeah. I can't fucking think straight. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's just really good. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like a sundae in a cafe. You know what I mean? Like where yeah. the air is sort of billowing with, you know, spices and cold air coming in from the outside, but warm, you know, gusts of air coming back from the kitchen. And I don't know. It's, I put it on and I was like, don't fuck this up. And she did it. It's so good. I really, really enjoy it.
That's so cute. And I wonder if like the Friday and Saturday scents are correlated to a Friday night or like a Saturday day.
Friday didn't give me the fantasy that I was craving. It's good, and I actually liked it the longer I wore it. All two of the three that I've worn have a really noticeable like narrative on the dry down. This one, the dry down, I like as much as I like it when I first sprayed on. Friday is really floral and a really bitter citrus in a way that surprised me, but I guess I understood it. This one, I think, is in my broken brain. I really like this, like, you know, this story more.
In the
scent itself and the copy. Gotcha. I really love it. I can't wait for you to smell it.
I wonder if, I guess, like, are tea scents considered gourmands because it's like edible or consumable?
That's a good question. And I don't think there's one specific category, because you and I both know that tea shows up in a lot of different scents. Tea can show up in a woody scent or a really incense-y scent or even some florals. So I think you can pull a tea in a gourmand direction. And I think not all, but many of the matcha scents that we've seen, whether they were matcha concept or just matcha was found within it, those go gourmand. But you know, we see a lot of black teas, a lot of white teas, and a lot of other bullshit. So it's not specifically a gourmand note, but I do like it when it pulls gourmand, because I like anything that's gourmand.
Of course.
I like what I like.
Yes. That's like the smell you later motto. We like what we like. Okay.
Yes.
I went to an event at the Times Square Edition Hotel this week. And of course, the lobby is scented. And I was taking the elevator, and then like the person, the elevator attendant, I suppose.
Was he a ghost?
No, it's like the guy who like presses the elevator buttons. Oh my God, what if he was a ghost? Yeah. He was just like a guy who died there, who just like for all eternity controls the elevators.
I thought those only existed in like the Tower of Terror.
Well, I don't know. He could have just been like a staff member who happened to be at the elevator at the time, who pressed a button for me also.
he fully didn't work there.
He's just like a helpful man. I was like, okay, cool. But like I walked into the elevator and was like hit in the face with this super smelly smell. And to the elevator guy, I was like, oh, wow, smells good in here. And he goes immediately, like a marketing person, was like, yeah, it's called Black Tea by Le Labo. And I was like, okay. You mean Thé Noir?
Hey.
Yeah. I was like, that is an existing scent. And then I was like, I think I've heard of that one. Or like, I think I've smelled that one before. And then he was like, oh no, it's like a custom scent made for the hotel. And I was like, pretty sure that exists already. But unless they like did like a tweaked version of it. But I was like, no, I think that's an existing
scent. I think two things can be true.
Yeah.
Because a place I stayed in Chicago, I want to say it was called the Roby, but I don't think that's true anymore, but I think it is actually. They have a Le Labo attached to them, and Le Labo made them a custom scent for like the lobby and shit. So like, perhaps
it's true that they did like
if
Thé Noir number 54 or some shit. I don't know. But
we could ask Le Labo that if they weren't such fucking tightwads.
I don't think I've ever communicated with anybody from Le Labo or a representative of them, like in my entire career.
I have, and let me tell you, it's not a treat. They're owned by Estee. What do you expect?
That's true. Oh, that's right. They are owned by Estee. I forgot about that. Well, 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 corporate.
I asked them for something like not even a product, like a question about perfume, of course. And they were like, we're not having me at all. Like, they did not want to give me what I wanted. And I was like, well, I didn't want it anyway. Fine. Good riddance. I'm like, imagine engaging in fucking.
Yeah, I don't know what the tactic is, but whatever, man.
I mean, like, I'm right. Please go on.
That's it. That's all I got.
So, I mean, let's hit up the edition and see what the tea is with Black Tea.
Yeah.
They'll tell us.
Because they're...
If La Laba won't, we'll go.
They're probably selling it, like, in a gift shop somewhere. If
there's one thing that I've learned in the year and a half that we've been doing this show, it's that you can't hide from us. So...
Quite true. We are very annoying.
I was going to say persuasive, but okay.
We will annoy you.
Save all. Mm-hmm. What do you smell like today?
I smell like something I didn't really love at first, but now do love. And that is Hibiscus Mahajad by Maison Crivelli. It is, speaking of gourmands that we're not sure if we're gourmands, it's very fruity and tart, which is like not normally my MO, but then it's also an extrait. So it's like a very concentrated scent. I sprayed this shit on in the morning, 8 hours later. No, more than 8 hours later. Mm-hmm. It's just as potent as it was.
Wait,
this morning.
Was this the one that you said smelled like a gummy bear, sort of?
Yes. Yeah. It is a fruity scent. It's like a fruity gourmand because it's, when I think of fruity scents, I think of things that are kind of like light and crisp and like kind of like clear. Like they're not really heavy, but this is like a fruity gourmand that it has like heft to it. It has like the tartness of hibiscus tea and like the sweetness of that. But then there is like a grounded or just like this anchor of something, like I want to say something gourmand, but I'm not sure what it is. It's just like this sweet warmth, almost like it is a tropical flower, but it has like that heat of the tropics in it with the brightness and the tartness and the juiciness of hibiscus. And then like several hours later, you just get that dry down of the sweet warmth. So I feel like it is kind of like a sour tropical gummy.
You've only just sold me on this scent. Is this what it feels listening to this show? Maybe. I'm like, my God, I want that.
But it's funny because I don't really go for these types of scents, but then I was wearing this and I was like, I smell so good all day.
You say that, but like you are coming to the dark side, girl.
Damn, I'm coming to the edible side. I love to have my mind changed.
Okay, we both know that's not true.
I know. I was like, please manipulate me. I love to have my notes. But there's
okay, looking at the notes right now, and like, I do see it. Yeah, this looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I didn't read the notes because I didn't want to be persuaded any which way. I just wanted to use the perception of my nose. But yeah, I feel like hibiscus tea is always a very fancy drink. It's kind of like the special thing on the menu. And so this is what that scent kind of feels like to me. It's like, ooh, I got the special cocktail on the menu. It's like a slutty fruit cocktail.
I love that. I've been described as the exact same way before. I'll be here all week. Is this the only one, literally in this apartment, is this the only one that has a colored component? Because the glass is like a neon coral.
It's kind of AKA like this, like
orangey,
yeah, like
homosexual.
orangey poppy red. But I think the extraits are the red bottles, and there's two others. There's patchouli magnetic, which is also incredible. I love it so much. I'm pretty sure.
Would I like that?
You actually might, because it's very, it veers very vanilla to me.
And
it's like a peppery, vanilla-y patchouli that is more just like, it has like a electric kind of like after a thunderstorm texture to it.
Bitch.
But it's almost it's like, it to me, it smells like dirt, but in like a sexy, artistic way. It's like fresh dirt after the rain, after a thunderstorm or a monsoon, because it's like got that earthiness of patchouli to it, but it's like the sweetness of whatever was growing in that earth. I don't know. I'm getting out of my depths here, but
I
went to a Maison Crivelli event last week, and that was the first time I tried that scent there, and I was like, this is incredible. What? And then mm-hmm. everybody else was spraying it on themselves, so then everybody was smelling everybody else's wrists, and it smelled like very peppery on me, and then it smelled like really sweet and gourmand on somebody else. And I feel like things always tend to pull a little more sweet on you. So I feel like you might bring out more of those like vanilla-y notes and like the tonka notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you might like it.
Get that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited to have it.
Same.
Yeah.
Emma, what's good? She's going to be like, will you get out of my inbox? Yeah.
She'd be like, enough. I've had enough of you.
You have all the perfumes.
Yeah, basically, she's like, you have her entire inventory. Please leave me alone.
It's fine.
Anyway, we love you, Emma.
Okay. I'm going to transition.
Okay.
I'm in a mood.
Are you ever?
Am I ever? Which is...
I'm in a mood, the name of this episode.
Done. We're talking about mood scents today.
We're talking about moods and scents.
Yes. Yes. Namely, not just my own.
Yes, we are talking about mood scents, scents with a Z, and it is another proprietary technology from our good friends at Givaudan. And as the name implies, they are scents that affect your mood. I was going to say they're triggering scents meant to be triggering.
Well,
I suppose that's true.
Well, we talk about those all the time. Yeah.
They're triggering scents for mm-hmm. some purpose. And we're mm-hmm. speaking with Givaudan perfumer Steven Nielsen, who has created a bunch of these mood scents. And we are going to get to the bottom. What are these moods? What are these scents? How do you smell a mood?
Yeah, I know that we've spoken a lot to Givaudan lately. This is, if you're asking yourselves, isn't this our third episode with Givaudan in quick succession? The answer is yes. But listen, girls, these big ass perfume houses are not easy to get a hold of. No. So when they wanted to chat with us, we're like, sure, why not? And we've enjoyed every second of it. And I think you're going to enjoy this episode too.
Absolutely. Don't you want to know what's going on behind your scents?
Exactly.
Exactly.
So let's learn.
Let us learn.
My name's Steven Nielsen, and I'm a senior perfumer at Givaudan Fragrances, and I'm based in the New York studio, and I work on a variety of projects. So anything from home fragrance to personal fragrance to fine fragrance. And it's a really exciting business because you really get to touch a lot of people's lives.
You true. Yeah.
I love that. Before we get too far down this road, we always start the episode off by asking our guests, Steven, what do you smell like today?
Oh, that's great, because as a perfumer, I'm always wearing what I'm developing. So let's see. So right now I smell like, as I like to say, man stink. I smell like a men's fragrance, and it's aromatic on the top and then some creamy woods in the back. And I really can't tell you much more than that, because a lot of what we do is proprietary.
Do you often give like really silly placeholder names for stuff you're working on?
Yeah, I do, actually. It depends on my mood when I'm developing a fragrance. Sometimes it can be very prosaic and, you know, maybe fougere, fresh. But sometimes, you know, I can get a little cheeky.
So what types of projects do you tend to work on with Givaudan?
Well, you know, at Givaudan, we touch everyone's lives in many, many different ways. And what's interesting is that the way fragrance has developed in that it is being used in many, many different end products. So I develop candles, I develop lotions, I develop body mists, the low concentration body mists, deodorants, aerosol body sprays, as well as the traditional 15% eau de toilette, eau de parfum kind of product. Mm-hmm. And I think what that shows is that people are really bringing scent into their life in many different ways. It's just not this thing that you put on in the morning to go out. But I think people are using scent in a very broad way, actually, throughout the day, because they realize the value of it.
Oh, definitely. I feel like now more than ever, scent is so much more thought about and people are so much more conscious of it and all of the things they use.
Definitely. You know, what was interesting with the last couple of years with the global pandemic is we didn't know what it was going to do to the fragrance industry. And actually, what it did, it really reinvigorated it. People really moved into the home scenting category, and they really see the benefit of putting a signature scent in their home and changing that scent. We've seen a resurgence in luxury fragrances, like EDPs, Eau de Toilette, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And after the lockdown, they really found that these things really gave them that emotional pick-me-up that they were so, so lacking.
Do you think it has something to do with, you know, when we were all experiencing our home in a different way? And by that, I mean, like being confined to it, it gave us a new appreciation for like where we lived. So people wanted to bring scent into that. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. I think people started renovating their homes to make them more cocooning, you know, a place where they can spend more time. And I think they realize that scent can be a really big part of that. You don't have to paint the walls. Just changing a fragrance can really change the mood of a room much quicker and much easier. So you put a gourmand in the fragrance in your home and you feel yummy, relaxed, cozy, or you put something really bright and energetic and it's a real pick-me-up. So definitely, it's a quick way to change the mood.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I feel like as I'm like staring at my collection of like 24 scented candles in the corner, I do feel like everybody is sort of like broadly aware that scent and emotion are tied together, usually mostly aware of it when it happens to them or like when a scent triggers an emotion. But I feel like you being the maestro of scents, as it were, was that always in like the back of Givaudan's mind or the forefront of Givaudan's mind, the fact that scent and emotions are so tied together?
You know, what's interesting about the fragrance industry, I always say that if I'm on a plane and somebody asks me what I do, I say I work in the chemical industry if I don't want to talk to anybody. But I say I work in fragrances if I'm in the mood to talk to somebody, because everybody has such an emotional connection to it. So I think going back 250 years, there's always been this real connection to scent that was both emotional as well as functional. So if you think about it, you know, there was this idea of distillation of herbs and things for medicinal purposes, but the real character of them was important also. Mm. It was important to have a specific liqueur with a specific flavor or a specific aroma. And the aroma was believed to influence, you know, the behavior or the function of that scent. And I think over time, some of that functionality moved away. But again, scent has always been so evocative. And the main reason is because it goes into the limbic system of the brain. So your olfactory bulb, the nerves, with a little bit of processing, go right through a hole in your skull and go right into your limbic system. And so the first thing they do is they elicit emotions. And that's why you always get that effect when you show somebody a fragrance. They get an immediate emotional reaction. I love it. I hate it. It reminds me, it makes me happy. It makes me sad. But that second processing, the higher brain processing, the memory of what it is always delayed. And that shows that it starts with emotion and then it processes to higher. So they go, oh, it makes me so happy. It's like a sunshiny day. I feel so invigorated. Oh, it's lemon. Oh, okay. That, no wonder. I love lemon. That kind of thing. Huh. Or, oh my gosh, I just want to start crying. And then you say, why? And they say, I don't know. Oh my gosh. It reminds me of my grandmother that I lost last year. So it's first emotion because it goes right into the, I'm not a physiologist or whatever, but I think it's a hippocampus or something right in the middle of your brain. The primordial part of the brain is all about emotion. So it starts there and then you get the higher process.
Right. I remember, I'm also not a physiologist, but I do remember reading about how your brain's olfactory bulb is so nestled closely to basically where your memories are filed. So they're just like proximally, they're just so close together, which is why it's like such a quick reaction.
And what's interesting is that it's specifically emotional memory. Now, you can look at a picture of your vacation to Aruba and you can remember everything about that trip to Aruba. But when you smell that suntan lotion or the Cerveza Masfina or something like that, or something, or a Pina Colada, the emotion is first, and then the memory of being in Aruba. So the emotion is so tightly tied in there that it's really like, it's so unique in terms of all of the senses.
Yeah.
That's almost scary.
It is a little scary. It's very manipulative.
Yeah.
Mwahaha. Yeah. I use my powers for good only.
Right.
I know we're here this episode to speak about mood sense, which is one of Givaudan's innovations in scent, and I guess a program or a project. I don't know what you would name it, but it specifically is to, I guess, utilize scent for emotional benefits. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think what we did is we know that emotions and moods are tied with fragrance, and we wanted to quantify that. And so I think we might call it a technology, because we're trying to quantify something that can oftentimes be so vague. So yeah. What the team did is they tried to really figure out what the boundaries are on the interaction between mood and scent.
That's so interesting that it's a calculation.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It is such a subjective thing. Like, how does one even begin to like form a mathematical equation for that?
Yeah, it's very true. And what's interesting is, if you think of quantum mechanics, let's talk about quantum mechanics for a moment. When the minute you query a system, you perturb the system. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you really aren't sure what you're getting back when you ask a question. And you know, the other example I always use is that they always talked about how if you put lemon scent in the air, workers will be more productive. Well, what they actually found out was that if you put vanilla scent, workers are more productive. And if you put, you know, banana scent, they're more productive. And actually what it turned out was, when you watch workers to see how productive they actually are more productive. And really the effect was the fact that the workers felt they were being watched, that they were like, uh-oh, I got to work harder.
Oh, wow.
So the minute you start asking a question, does this fragrance make you happy? 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 You ruin the emotion. And what's great about what was done at Givaudan is they didn't really ask, what do you feel? They used a variety of different techniques. And then using data analysis, they teased apart these buckets of what we call moods, not necessarily emotions. And so what they did is they showed people fragrances, and then they measured their brainwaves. And then they showed somebody else the same fragrance and measured their brainwaves. And they looked for patterns in the brainwaves that were consistent across fragrance ingredients and combinations. They also didn't say, how are you feeling? They showed people pictures, and they had people point to pictures that they associated with these fragrances. So it was using a different correlation rather than this very high level language processing. And then they also combined different ingredients and measured the responses for those ingredients. So they put this into a big database, a big analysis machine, and they came out with these large buckets. And so they came out with three general moods that they found were correlated with combinations of ingredients. So the moods that they came out with were invigorating, happy, and relaxing. And those were these kind of meta moods that they could pull out of the data.
That's so interesting.
That's so wild. Sorry, Sable, you know that launch that I'm working on?
Mm. Yeah.
About like fragrances to mess with your moods. Those are the three categories of scents or of moods that they're trying to evoke.
Well, well, well.
Huh. I have some questions when we turn the mics up. I've got some questions for you. That's so fascinating, though. So you measured it not by asking the question, because you didn't want to, affect the answer. Mm-hmm. You just measured the actual response to it.
We measured different responses, and using our sensory profiling expertise and our perfumery expertise, we were able to really get some really, what I feel were very robust results.
I wonder if those categories or the smells that correlate to those categories would be different in different areas of the world.
I think we did quite a broad selection of populations to do this research. Mm. And what's interesting is that the ingredients weren't as kind of expected as you would have thought. Okay. So for an example, relaxing. Vanilla is not considered one of the ingredients that we use when we want to evoke relaxing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you think about it, you know, for one person relax, you show them vanilla and you, oh, it's like a cake. It's like being at my mother's house, so relaxing. Or you show it to somebody else and they're like, yum, cake, I'm ready to dive in. Great. So you can imagine how the emotion might uncorrelate across different populations. And similarly, certainly for essential oils and aromatherapy, lavender holds a real specific place in terms of aromatherapy. But what we found in our mood sense is that it was not associated with relaxation. But if you look at the relaxation ingredients, I almost feel that it's almost ingredients that create this synesthesia, this feeling of almost like cashmere on skin. So it's soft wood notes, creamy fruits, like almost like the velvet of a peach, musk notes, which a lot of people don't know what they really smell like, but I always say that they're like a hug in a bottle. So all these ingredients were kind of grouped in more of an abstract way rather than a prosaic way. Now, certainly happy fragrances and the ingredients are happy. I always call them more visual because they're very colorful. When you smell them, they're very colorful, evocative of color. And the invigorating almost have a trigeminal effect. They're peppery. They kind of tingle a little bit when you smell them. So, you know, I think there's almost this secondary synesthesia effect of some of these ingredients rather than the more prosaic things like you smell, I don't know. Yeah. Like I said, vanilla, and you'd think that's relaxing, but it really didn't come out that way.
Wow.
Now, certainly, you know, there are other moods we could have studied, you know, aggravated or irritated, but we didn't spend a lot of time trying to stimulate people with those.
Yeah. I guess like what would be the end product of that?
Well, you know, if you think about it, think about the smell of natural gas. That smell is irritating and scary.
Yeah.
And it does create an emotion. The minute you walk into your house and if you smell that, you're like, uh-oh. And so it's really interesting that you sometimes want to create that feeling. And in my previous life, I was a flavorist and we worked on putting flavors into medicine. And I could make a medicine taste like, you know, chocolate syrup. But really, what's the benefit of that? You want medicine to taste a little bit like medicine so people don't overdose, so people don't take too much of it, so people know that it's working. And similarly, toothpaste. You know, the reason mint is used in toothpaste is it connotes this clean feeling.
Yes.
So it is all about these different associations with mood that you want to layer into your products.
Yeah, it's almost like it's like introducing a different texture into your scent perception. Mm-hmm.
100%. I know that so many people, when they talk about fragrance, you know, we talked earlier about what, you know, can you recognize the scent? And a lot of people find it difficult, but they can oftentimes talk about the emotions or the textures. Like you said, crispy. Oh, it's crispy. Mm-hmm. Or it's cocooning or soft or colors. And that's a lot easier for people to associate with fragrances sometimes than saying, oh, it's tomato paste or, you know, who knows?
I find it interesting that you talked about like the synesthesia of scent in relation to calm. And a lot of notes that you mentioned that were calming are not, like you said, things that we would think to be naturally calming, but they are more textural. Do you think there's any sort of correlation between like the texture of a scent, like you said, like the skin of a peach, et cetera, and calming? Like do those go hand in hand for any particular reason?
You know, if you think back before COVID, I'm a hugger. Okay. So I hug with abandon and I find that, you know, I always say a 10-second hug is better than medicine. And I think that touch, there's something about that sense of touch that is very relaxing. So it's almost like plugging into that touch with some of these relaxing fragrances and this idea of this caressing, this softness. And so some of these notes do kind of create that hierarchy. You know, the fact that musks fall into the relaxing patent. Like I said, they smell like a hug in a bottle, but I've almost always said that musks have this almost pheromone-like effect. They really are highly variable across population. One person can smell a musk and the other person may not have the receptor to be able to smell that musk. But we use combinations of musk to get a musky effect in a fragrance. And that does, it's just like I said, it's like, smells like clean cotton, a hug, a caress. I mean, it's just very skin-like.
Something just occurred to me as you were explaining that. And so I don't know how you feel about this because you are very much so in the industry, but Tynan and I have noticed that there is this huge fragrance trend towards skin scents, you know, like really light, musky, like you said, kind of like a hug in a bottle scents that kind of, they don't really smell very strongly. Sometimes they don't really seem to smell like anything at all, but they're just so popular right now. And so many brands are putting them out with that type of verbiage. And I'm wondering like, oh, is this kind of a broader, almost like scentscape of just like the desire to be held and to be cozy and comforting?
100%. I do think that when people use that term skin scent, it does create this idea of what that smell is with this caressing texture. A lot of them can be very diffusive, and you know, some people wearing these skin scents will walk in a room and you'll very quickly smell them. So it's not like they're shy fragrances. They're very much associated with much more of this caressing textural feeling. And so, yes, I think that's definitely one section, subsection of fragrances. Now, I mean, I'm going to talk to a little bit more abstractly. I have this theory that fragrances have gone through these cycles. And I think one of the initial cycles of fragrances and synthetic fragrances was the idea of recreating nature. So the idea was, you know, in the late 1800s, I would say you'd think you'd create a fragrance and it would smell like a rose. And what happened with fragrances really around the turn of the century is it became much more like storytelling, and it became more abstract. So you ended up with fragrances that created a story about a lifestyle, what kind of person they were. And some of those were designer scents. So the idea was that you buy this fragrance and put it on, and almost in a postmodern way, become another person, become transformed. And what I think has happened with fragrances, with these skin-like scents, is that it's more like revealing your true self. Ooh. Who am I really? And I think that that's a real transition with the way people are looking at fragrances. And I think with the mood and emotions and candles in the home, they're using these fragrances to project a mood that they're currently feeling at the time.
I can totally see that, especially because our culture is like hyper individualistic and all about quote unquote authenticity now.
100%.
How quickly or effectively do you think a scent can affect a person's mood? And is it sustained? Like we talked about when a mood does affect your emotion, you know, is it just within the instant or is it a lasting thing? Like what's the longevity of both the effect and how long it lasts?
Yeah.
Well, like we were saying, the fact that it's a nerve conduction right through your nose, right into the middle of your brain, it really is instantaneous. And that's that aha moment. And as you continue to smell it, you can continue to get that feeling. But after a certain time, you get habituation. You know, there are ads on TV about going nose blind. But at some point, the receptors in your nose stop registering that ingredient, and it just becomes a background scent. And so that's the habituation effect. And so one of the ways you can get around that is to change your scent periodically. You know, it's the effect of, you know, somebody comes up and goes, oh, I love the fragrance you're wearing. And you say, oh, I can't even smell it anymore. But everybody around you is still smelling it because they're moving into your sphere of fragrance. So yes, you maybe your personal relaxation effect may be waning, but hopefully you're making the rest of the world relaxed or invigorated or happy with your scent. So I find that very interesting. Now, what's really interesting to me too is the fact that how specific that fingerprinting is of a smell. And you can be away from a fragrance for a year, 10 years, 20 years, but you know, 50 years later, you walk into your grandmother's house and you just remember everything about it. I mean, the fact that you can create, it's like recognizing a face, but not just saying, oh, look, that's Sable. You say, oh my gosh, I remember how much fun I had with Sable. And so the fact that that kind of emotional memory gets imprinted into your brain that can be revived 50 years later. It really was the inspiration for the book Remembrances of Things Past by Marcel Proust. He dipped this Madeleine in linden blossom tea, and he suddenly was transformed across time. So I think this emotional connection can be instantaneous, but it transports us. I mean, I just get chills when I think about it. When it happens to me, it's just so special.
It is like a second version of deja vu, I think.
Deja sniff?
Yes. I'm forgetting the word to smell in French, of course.
Sentir, déjà sentir.
Déjà sentir, there we go. I will use those powers for evil, actually.
Oh my gosh. We could use the powers of fragrance for evil.
Yes, we absolutely could.
Yeah.
I feel like we, Tyne and I, get asked a lot about people who are like, I love this scent, but like my ex-partner used to wear it. So every time I smell it, I feel sad. So how do I deprogram this scent from this memory?
Yeah, is that possible?
Yeah, how does that work?
Okay, so interesting. I've never really thought about trying to condition yourself away from a scent, but I think it could be done because, you know, people with phobias certainly try to decondition themselves from some of those phobias by trying to reassociate that fragrance with something else. So that could happen. But, you know, I think maybe hold on to those emotions, you know, and put it in a safe place or something and put it in a different place. You know, they talked about how, in France, women who were cheated on by their husbands or their boyfriends, they would go into their boyfriend's apartment and they would pour their fragrance on their bed. and because so anytime he's in the bed with another woman, he would think only of the woman he cheated on. And wow. And so, you know, I think it's you know, okay, there we're back to using our powers for
diabolical
evil again. Yes, exactly. But again, it is so powerful.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. You're going to be walking down the street and smell a fragrance and it's going to make you sad, but there's also times it's going to make you happy. So
just got to take the good with the bad.
That's right. That's authenticity.
Yeah. In my theory, I'm like, what if you just overexpose yourself to the scent and everything, so it starts to like dilute the specificity of where you first learned to attach those memories? I don't know if that's
certainly. I could imagine doing that. You know, certainly people have, you know, aversions to food.
Yes,
you eat something and you get food poisoning, and then you suddenly go, oh, I'm never going to eat that again.
Oh yeah.
And then sometimes over time you start, you know, little by little, you try it again, or it appears in something. And so maybe that's the way you do it. You keep a little bit around and you smell it at different times and try to dissociate the emotions.
That just brought up a memory of Trader Joe's pesto tortellini that I'll never eat again.
Yeah.
Earlier when you were talking about how people were being tested with lemon and vanilla to see like what it would, how it would manipulate their behavior, I'm so curious, how are the scents to be tested selected? Is there a theory behind why certain scents might elicit certain behaviors or feelings?
I don't know how they were selected for this research. I do think that it was a lot of work and they started seeing patterns in the work. And then they started saying, oh, look at these certain things are creating these emotions. Let's see how far we can push this. Mm-hmm. Many years ago, I saw a lecture at the Rockefeller University, and it was about nematodes. So those tiny little worms that live in the earth. And what they did is they found that even nematodes were hardwired to respond to certain aromas. And a nematode, when it sensed that, so a nematode has, it's almost like two nostrils. It has two sensors on the left and the right side of its little head, the little wormy head. And if the concentration is higher on the left, and if it's a scent it likes, it turns towards it, towards the left. Or if it's something it doesn't like, it turns away from it and turns toward the right. And this is hardwired in it at the basic level. And what struck me was that some of these materials that they were using to make the worm turn left and right are some of the most powerful materials we have on our palate, first of all. So some of these things were things like pyrazines and phenylacetic aldehyde. And these are things that come from the decay of plant matter. And so the worm would sense this and it would be hardwired to go, yikes, get me away from here. I don't want to decay. Or it would be something like, you know, the smell of fruit or something nutritious. And then the worm would turn towards it. And so it's interesting that we've kind of forgotten that those things may be hardwired into us at a very high low level. and so I think what happened when we started doing mood scents is that we started re-uncovering that some of these textures and reactions were very hardwired in. You think about things like the Maillard reaction, cooking food. There's something really primordial that draws you to the smell of cooking food. White sugar, raw flour, and plain butter really don't do anything until you start combining them and cooking them. And these molecules that are generated during this heating and browning process are so attractive and so emotive that they're really, they almost have to be hardwired into us in a certain extent for to be globally loved. Everybody loves the smell of, of cooking food.
That is true. Yeah, for sure.
That's fascinating.
Everyone loves bacon, right?
Maybe not a vegan, but...
that's true.
So we know that scent has an effect on mood, but we were wondering, like, when did the broader interest from a brand perspective become a thing where you wanted to create scents that affected the consumer's mood? Because I've seen also a ton of market research on the consumer side that they are looking for scents with like mood altering factors. So like, I wonder, is it like a chicken or the egg question, or did there become an interest on, you know, the brand side to create a more powerful seeming fragrance?
Well, I think that this idea of effect on emotion has always been there. But if you imagine, when you bought opium back in the 80s, you weren't using it to be relaxed. You were being, you were buying it to be seductive, or and maybe it was just a different set of emotions that we were looking at. And I think, you know, to Sable's comment, maybe this idea of authenticity is coming through, is that I want a fragrance that mirrors emotions that I feel rather than trying to put on a different emotion. And I think that maybe the emotional range that we're seeing is very different from what we used to think of in terms of the heyday of the 80s, when you're putting on a different, you know, you're putting on Poison and you were trying to, you know, you wanted everybody in the room to, all the guys to, you know, turn their head. But now it's, like you said, with these skin scents, it's much more a personal reflection of your personal emotion, and it's much more a gentle turning of your emotion into states with a candle or a plug-in, trying to really, you know, create an overall effect that's very, very different. So maybe the emotions are different now.
I think so, yeah. I do feel like the culture of fragrance in the 80s was very bombastic, and the ads were way more aggressive than they are now. they're getting better with the whole, like, over-sexualization of fragrance.
Right.
And that was, I mean, that was so much of fragrance was based on attraction.
Yes.
I mean, that really was the idea behind so much of it. You're using fragrance to, you know, attract a woman, attract a man, attract somebody. And I think we've really moved away from that, because maybe we have other ways of doing it. So we're coming, so we, you know, what do you have? We have Tinder, we have all these other things. And so we're using scent for a very, very different function now.
Whenever I meet somebody who is just like, oh, I only wear perfume for special occasions, I'm always like, but what about for yourself?
Right.
There's a lag in realizing that one can enjoy fragrance like solely for yourself, not to like advertise yourself to others.
Well, and that's a really important point. You know, there was a time when fragrances were expected to open the door for you.
Yeah.
And I think now, one of the biggest questions I get from fragrance novices is, how much fragrance should I wear? And if it's a fragrance that's relatively modern, you can wear a fragrance. It's designed not to scare anybody anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we are using our powers for good now. And yes, it projects yourself beyond arm's length, possibly. But there are plenty of fragrances that really do keep it close, and people will sense it only when they come in close. So I do encourage people to, if they're kind of, oh, I'm scared of scent, really start looking at modern scents out there and the variety that is out there, because they are designed very differently. It's not shoulder pads like the 80s, you know, just like fashion changes.
Yeah.
We've really changed the way the fashion of fragrance and scent also.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The intention, I think, has changed, which is like the big deciding factor.
Yeah.
With mood scents, because they have an intention with them, I wonder, is it that like you create a scent with the mood scents blueprint in mind and then it becomes part of the collection, or are mood scents pre-existing and then they can be added into other products to make them a relaxing candle or like a relaxing home spray?
The way mood scents are designed is that it's a holistic fragrance design. So you have to have a certain number of mood scent ingredients that reinforce a specific mood. You have to use them at a specific level in the fragrance. And you have to make sure you exclude moods that neutralize it, that are opposite. So I can't be relaxing and happy at the same time. If I'm creating a fragrance that's going to be relaxing, I cannot use too many happy ingredients or invigorating ingredients. And what you do is you end up creating the whole perfume. So it really does smell like something. It's not just this like invisible pheromone or something we drop in that creates an effect. It really does, like I always say, we're creating smells. And it really does create a smell that creates a feeling, an emotion, and a mood. And so you really do smell it. And what I like about the mood sense is there is that connection. You don't smell it and go, oh, that doesn't smell like relaxing to me. What's great about it is they really do smell relaxing or invigorating or happy. And I think that's really key to it.
That's interesting.
It's cool to hear that there are so many parameters of what does actually make a mood scent and what does not. I guess what I mean is like, it's not just romance. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's skeptical of that.
It's all the data behind it. And that's what makes me so impressed with our mood scent technology is that there really does, it's very coherent.
Do you find that when brands come to Givaudan and they're like, we want to create a scent that does this in the mood scent house, is there a certain type of product that they tend to like really rely on mood scents for, like for instance, body care products or candles or.
It's funny that I think with as we call it, multi-category beauty, people are really looking for these additional benefits in any number of products, whether it's an underarm deodorant I've worked on mood scents for and to, you know, to fine fragrances. So, and to candles. So it really does cover the range. I think people are looking for those additional benefits that they can use to tell a story for consumers. The challenge is when people come in and get disappointed that, you know, the top seller in the market is X and I want X, but I want it relaxing. And then when we tell them you can't have X and have it be relaxing, the smell has to change. Then that can be a disconnect. But then when we show them the relaxing fragrances, they get it.
Oh, interesting.
Do you think, sort of jumping off of a question or so back, that our culture's sort of collective interest in quote unquote wellness, whatever the hell that actually means, has anything to do with people looking for more out of their fragrance? So not just to smell good, but to feel something as well?
Yeah, wellness, it's an interesting one. I think it comes from the fact that we do see multi-benefits in so many things that we have in our lives. Your phone can do so many things, even your car, just everything is multi-benefit. Your computer can do multi-function. So I think when people think about fragrances, they also want to think that there's an additional benefit in every product. And so I think this idea that, you know, it's just not a deodorant, it's actually making me wellness, you know, and so I think people are trying to bring that benefit into so many different aspects of their life because it is important. You talked about the spa effect. My gosh, you go to a spa, you feel wonderful. If only putting on a deodorant and brushing my teeth could be like going to a spa. So I think there is something there where people are saying, well, let's try to get that extra benefit in. What can we do? And so I think that's leading to a lot of it.
That makes sense.
I'm so interested if people actually, because I'm sure most people, when they buy a product that has been mood scented, like they're not aware of that. But I wonder if the feedback is like, oh, I love this. I love this body lotion because like I always feel so relaxed afterwards. I wonder what the feedback is for that.
You know, it's funny. I'm not sure that I know that we've ever done that follow-up research. I do know that sometimes they put the claim on pack. So people will know that this is fragrance with a patented relaxing fragrance or something like that. I do know that that clients have done clinical studies to show the benefit of the fragrance. So I do know that, for example, the new company the recent fragrance, their Mind Wellness fragrance.
Mind Energy,
yeah.
I have smelled it.
Okay, well, yeah. That's my fragrance.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know if they claim the mood patent that we have in there, but I know that they did do their own clinical studies to show the benefit of using that fragrance. So I think It's funny, the fact that their clinicals worked and we put the technology in there does show that it works hand in hand.
I think I remember them saying that the scent was meant to, I guess, invigorate your mind and get like the creative juices flowing, or just make you, I guess, a bit more alert and more easily able to focus.
Yeah. And it was an invigorating patent fragrance.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm like, that's a tall order for my brain, but
yeah, right.
But the scent itself is beautiful. So I was like, you can never go wrong with wearing a lovely scent.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, I hate to say it, but that is a mood benefit. Pretty is, yeah, you know, and pleasant. You know, that's
no, it absolutely is. Yeah,
it's a great mood.
I think when people feel good about themselves, they're just, I don't know what the word is, but like, I'm like, they're able to do better things.
Well, I think just again, back to your comment about authenticity, when people feel better about the way they smell, I really do feel that they're more able to bring their authentic self.
Yes.
And I think that's such a great positive thing.
Yeah. Acting and behaving with intention and with confidence. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now that I know that that's a mood scent, I'm going to be just like mainlining it.
Yeah. I keep a bottle in my office, actually.
Yeah. I'm so curious to know how mindfully fragrance is created with an intention in mind. That's not just like, oh, we wanted something that smelled good, but we wanted something that smelled good and had this additional benefit for your emotional, mental well-being, which is honestly something we all need right now, especially with the price of therapy these days.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think fragrances have evolved in that way. It used to be that you just created a fragrance that smelled good and you explored that. Mm-hmm. But I think people want additional benefits in their fragrance, and mood is one of them. You know, biodegradable could be another. We have other technologies that talk about skin biome, that talk about, you know, antimicrobial. So it is definitely this idea that we design with more intention in what we do. I wouldn't say that olfactory becomes secondary, but it becomes one part of the puzzle or one part of the story we're creating. And, you know, definitely including ingredients with a give back, doing good for communities where they're grown, or ingredients that are upcycled or natural. So I think definitely it's just really a big part of how we develop fragrance. And because mood is so important, the mood scent technology can be really powerful and to create a real compelling story when it aligns with a brand's purpose.
Yeah. Do you think that there is a difference in the level of efficacy of mood manipulation or mood effect with synthetic versus natural ingredients?
So in our technology, there's no differentiation between natural or synthetic source materials. If the ingredient has a smell that creates a specific feeling, we've shown that, for example, a natural bergamot and the smell of a compounded bergamot do create the same invigorating effect. Okay.
I feel like there's a perception that people think natural ingredients are better and like their effect is more, I don't know, like pure than synthetic.
I think it just depends on the benefit or the story you want to tell. I wouldn't say one is better than the other. There's pluses and minuses to both of them.
I do think it's so much of wellness culture and wellness marketing relies on storytelling that will take, you know, a little nugget of truth, of scientific truth, and then stretch it to be this grand thing that's going to change your life.
Yeah. I mean, growing a large field of plant material for fragrance, or you can use synthetic and then use that land to grow food to feed people who need food. And that's wellness. You know, eating is wellness.
Yeah. Also. Do you think that scent therapy could ever become something we embrace as part of like healthcare and self-care?
So scent therapy is definitely not a drug. And that needs to be really clear because drugs alter the physiology of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And fragrance doesn't do that. So when you pick up a bottle of your prescription on the back and it says drug facts, even an over-the-counter thing, you know, even toothpaste has drug facts on the back, and the drug in toothpaste is fluoride, and that alters the physiology in your mouth that remineralizes your teeth. And so, but certainly the fragrance you put in a toothpaste or the fragrance that you can deliver when a patient may be being treated with drugs can certainly create a secondary effect. And I don't know if we do it enough. I think sometimes we rely only on medicine, but I think that the emotional, you know, as you said, well-being part is a really big part of treatment, and understanding people's needs it could be really important. And I do think it's growing.
I feel like in the 90s, we had aromatherapy, and then now it's just become something much more complex.
Yeah.
I feel like we like stopped talking about aromatherapy for better or worse, but now we're, you know, coming back to it in a more, I don't know, not even educated way, but in a more complex way. But it also, there also seems to be like a more narrow objective that, as you've spoken about, like these will actually affect your mood in this way, and this way, rather than this big, like mysterious umbrella term of just like aromatherapy that we all grew up thinking was BS.
Mm-hmm. So much lavender.
I think back to the point of personalization that you brought up at the beginning, is that people are very individual and they know they're individuals now. And so this idea that one essential oil is going to cure everybody's ills doesn't necessarily hold water for a lot of people. But they do know that, you know, they can create their own blends of essential oils that might work with them. And with the guidance of people of, you know, saying, you know, this is a suggested blend, but, you know, find what works for you and find out how to use it for yourself. I think that's very, that, you know, people are understanding that they can, you know, play perfumer a little bit. There's a little more access with the essential oils online and stores that people can play perfumer, play emotional alchemist.
Cut to me just drinking a bottle of Mind Energy.
Literally.
just spritzing it straight up the nose, straight to the brain.
Isn't it funny that, like, we talked to Nuko and, you know, the person behind that, and then, you know, maybe a year later we talked to the actual perfumer?
Life comes at you full circle.
It's giving full circle.
It's giving full circle. It's giving paid forward.
Right. I mean, I have seen quite a bit of research behind the scenes that consumers are looking for a sense that pack a little bit more punch in terms of, you know, manipulating their emotions for better.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see how that's all coming together from the inside in this case. And it's also, I just think, I'm happy to know whether you think it's bullshit or not, that, you know, Jibidon has, like he said, so many parameters of this is what, these are notes that affect your mood this way, whether you expected it or not. And these are how you have to combine them in this percentage to create a mood set. Yeah. Like it's good to know that there's actual science behind it and there, not just everything could be a mood set, you know?
Exactly. I'm like picturing all like the, I'm picturing Big Lavender being like, these are lies.
Big Lavender. No, literally.
That's the name of this episode. Just kidding.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I was like, why does everyone just agree that lavender is relaxing? Like, who decided this? I don't know. And now we know.
It's gross.
It's a lie. Lavender itself.
Like, well, maybe not a lie, but.
Yeah, the flower is nice, but I was just like, what makes this any more relaxing than like jasmine or roses or whatever?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Vanilla, I do believe, though. But.
Yeah, that was interesting that he. Because I never. As you know. I am a vanilla disciple, and I never thought of that as, well, I didn't expect that to be in the calming house, you know?
I kind of get it because anything that smells like baked goods, I think would be comforting, which would be calming.
You're right.
So that
like, it's homey.
Yeah. Anything homey, I can get that.
Yeah. I guess in that way I do see it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess if not comforting or calming rather, like what the hell would it be? Certainly not energizing. Maybe joyful.
Maybe joy. Yeah, I could feel like it, like being the line between like comforting, calming, and then like happy.
Yeah. I suppose, like you said, it could be an all.
Yeah.
It's just like the way that you use it and what percentages.
I wonder if Clinique Happy would categorize as a mood scent, even though that was made in like, I think the 90s.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't know.
Energizing.
Well, that was very enlightening.
It was, that was very, very energizing. Very energy. Yes. The smell of that episode was very energizing.
Honestly.
Yeah. Well,
I'm hungry and have a fever.
Tynan has a fever and he needs to eat, so we must leave. Post haste. I hope you enjoy that. I hope you will think more in depth about Skin Sense now, as I will.
Or you don't have to, or if don't. You're like me and hate them. But if they're, you know, a lot of people have said that because of the podcast, they are thinking more in depth about their just the sense in their lives in general. And I think that's pretty cool.
I do think that's pretty cool. Cool.
Love to think.
Love to think. This is the Smelling Man's podcast. Thinking Man's Smelling Podcast. Follow us on Instagram. We're at smellyoulater.mp3. Leave us a nice little review and 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I am at Sabletooth Tigra.
I am at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will
smell you later.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.